Welcome to another Blind Entrepreneurship Bonus episode, and today is a great one. We are talking about mental health, which oftentimes is frowned upon. The conversation is incredibly difficult to have, but mental health speaks volumes to us here at Penji, and at times it's incredibly easy to neglect this mental health because there are so many things happening at once. But taking each day at a time, understanding your goals, being able to remove yourself when you see yourself staggering is an important character trait to have early on in your career. And the sooner you understand what's happening to your mind, your body, and your soul as early and often as you can, and being able to have conversations about that, it will make it easier for you to fix it as you continue to grow. If you're a seasoned entrepreneur and you're already in the weeds, it may be a little bit difficult to kind of understand and assess what your mental health problems could be, but at least you're able to understand. That's why you're listening today. You're able to put forth that effort to make a step forward in the right direction. We have three fantastic individuals, Lynette Davis, Bruce Malcolm, and Chris Ferraro. And it was done a couple weeks back by Sakina, who is the Director of Partnerships here at Penji. And she does an amazing job facilitating the conversation, asking the questions. And to be perfectly honest, I think it's probably one of the best episodes that I've heard to date. And it's because of the questions and the direction that she led. And of course, the answers are great too. So let's get to today's Penji Masterclass.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us on today's live webinar. Today's topic is breaking the stigma of mental health in the workplace. I'm really excited for this conversation. So if you guys don't know, I'm Sakina, the Director of Partnerships here at Penji, and I will also be the moderator of this panel. So today I'm joined by three mental health professionals with three different, very unique perspectives. So we'll talk about their experiences with their own mental health and how we can create initiatives to make the mental health conversation less taboo. So I'll let my guests do about 30 seconds and introduce themselves. So let's start with you, Lynette.
Okay, great. I wasn't sure if we were going in alphabetical order or not. Hi, everyone. My name is Lynette Davis, and I am the founder and executive director of Love Yourself, Love Your Business. I have my little shirt on here.
Nice.
So we are essentially a community of business peers offering each other peer support, mental health peer support. And I am really excited to be here and to have this conversation representing the peer community for mental health.
Awesome. And Chris?
My name is Chris Ferraro, and my business is Free to Flourish. And I work with clients mostly on crippling anxiety and unresolved grief. So I do it from a perspective of finding where the emotion, the energy of the emotion is in their bodies, and using these very cutting edge energy psychology techniques to resolve them, including EFT, emotion code, and energy medicine.
Wow, nice. And Bruce?
Well, good morning. So I am a college professor. I have a master's in counseling psychology. And so what I specialize in is the affective neurobiology. So sort of like what goes on in the brain to reduce the impact of stress and the impact that that has on the body.
Awesome. So I want to begin with just going back a little bit into how you guys were actually brought up. So within your households, what was your experience with mental health? Was there, did your family address this topic head on? Was it something that was brushed under the rug? How did that affect the way you view mental health in your adult life? So I want to get an answer from everybody. Lynette, we can start with you.
Okay. So growing up, no, we really didn't address mental health that much in my household. What was prevalent in my family was substance use. When I first wanted to pursue a career, I actually pursued a career in substance abuse, and I started learning more about mental health because a lot of people who are in the substance abuse industry tend to deal with people who are dual diagnoses. Mm-hmm. They have substance abuse issues as well as mental health issues, concerns. So I didn't really become familiar with mental health, like really straight up mental health until college. Mm-hmm. And that was on my own. So it wasn't that we didn't acknowledge mental health in my house. It was just like, it wasn't like this thing. Like, right. It wasn't like, this is depression. This is anxiety. It was right. Just like, oh, I'm not feeling really good, or I'm stressed out, mm-hmm. things like that.
Do you feel like there was a lack of information as opposed to how it is now, where more people are talking about it? Or why do you think that it wasn't addressed at all? Or you didn't know what these things that you were feeling were?
In my case, no, I didn't quite understand what it was that I was going through. I just knew that I didn't feel right within myself. Mm-hmm. I knew that much. And I was really fortunate because I took advantage of guidance counseling through my high school. But even then, like, I really didn't address the depression thing. I just kind of thought it was something that had to do with, you know, being a teenager in a school, mm-hmm. Where I was a minority. There were not many people of color in the high school that I went to. So I just kind of thought it, you know, it was something like that. I didn't have definitions.
Gotcha.
For anything.
Gotcha. And what about for you, Chris? What was your experience growing up?
Well, my household was a culture of avoidance of all emotions. So there was a lot of stuffing going on. There was a lot of not talking about anything. Children were to be seen and not heard. It wasn't okay to be angry or to express any uncomfortable emotions. And when I was 8, I was removed from my school and put into a special school for what were supposed to be child geniuses. And I had some undiagnosed learning disabilities. I had an auditory processing disorder, and I had attention deficit disorder. And when I was in a regular school, I was okay. When I got placed in this school and was going from 4th grade level work to 6th, 7th, and 8th grade level work, and I didn't have any family support in that, I developed severe anxiety. So out of that, I went to college. I got a degree in sociology, and I was a social service counselor for 15 years in a very large nonprofit working with children and at-risk families in New Jersey.
You said that your family was a family of avoidance and you didn't really deal with emotions at all head on. How did that affect you in your adult life? Obviously, you're not at that point now because you've learned to deal with your energy in different ways. But what was the effect that it had on your relationships and just your emotions in general?
Well, often what I find when I'm working with clients that their anxiety is a lot of just repressed emotional stuff. My household was not unique. Very few people grow up in households where we're taught how to process our emotions and allow them to be. It starts when, you know, toddlers are crying and they're being told not to cry, right? So it mm-hmm. begins all the way back then. So for me, crippling social anxiety, like I could not walk into a supermarket unless it was a 24-hour one and I would go at 2 a.m. And if there was a single person in the aisle, I had to leave that aisle and come back when they had left. Wow. It was not being able to return phone calls. It was lots of missed opportunities. It was a constant stage fright. I did spoken word poetry for years. It was something that fulfilled me, but literally the performance anxiety, I'd be sick for a week before a performance. So I quit. So it limited my life in a variety of ways.
Wow. And what about for you, Bruce? What was your experience growing up?
I think my childhood was kind of just a wild ride. I grew up in the 80s and there wasn't a lot of understanding of mm-hmm. what certain behaviors meant or what certain choices, how they impacted kids. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really know what I didn't know. I didn't know what I needed. I didn't know how to ask for it. I spent 6 years working as a school-based mental health clinician. And I can't tell you how many meetings I was in where we'd be like, okay, what does this kid need? Or I was like, oh my gosh, I needed this when I was a kid. Like, right. Where was this when I was a kid? And it just wasn't there.
Yeah. Now, you all said that there wasn't really a lot of talk about mental health in your households, whether because of lack of information or avoidance with you, Chris. And for you, Bruce, you said you didn't know what you didn't know. So how are you breaking that cycle going forward? I don't know if you have families now, all of you, but if you do have a family in the future, how will you break that cycle? Bruce, we can start with you again.
So for me, I've got three kids. Right now, they are 10, 13, and 16. And breaking that cycle starts at bedtime for me. My kids know that that's their time with dad. And so I don't know, that's kind of sacred. If my kids have something that's troubling them, or I notice that there's something that's troubling them, that's the time that we can talk about that. And so it's just, it's created a space and an opportunity that even if life is crazy, that there's still bedtime. There's still that place that someone can say, Hey dad, I need some extra time tonight.
Right.
Which is my little cue of like, okay, we got something to talk about. Yeah. And then I don't know. I think if you take a kid and you say, stop doing that, instead of asking, why are you doing that? Like, what's the function of why are you doing that? If you can figure that out, that takes empathy. It takes being able to put yourself in that kid's shoes, even though you're separated by 20, 30, 40 years.
Right.
If you can put yourself in their shoes, then they're no longer just child, they're human. And if they're human, they've got problems, they're just on a different scale than ours. And that gives us a framework of like, okay, we can figure this out. You know what, when I was your age, I dealt with that too. Or no, never dealt with that at all. You're a teenage girl, okay? I never dealt with that at all. But I'm sorry that you're having to go through that. And thank you so much for just trusting me, you know, as your dad. Thank you for trusting me enough to share that with me.
Wow. And do you see that as something that they look forward to now, like coming home and being able to open up to you? Because it is hard, especially as a teenager, you don't really want anything to do with your parents, period, at those ages. I know I didn't. So do you find that they look forward to that now?
I think one of the things that I needed was for my parents to know, and they couldn't, their experience in the world is different than what I needed. And what they needed as kids isn't what I needed as a kid. Right. So they worked very hard to make sure that I had what they didn't, but that's not what I needed. I'm growing up in a world that they didn't grow up in. Mm-hmm. And so just kind of acknowledging that for my kids, like, hey, look, guys, this might be 1997 advice. and just recognizing like the world is different. And that just kind of creates a space of, I don't know, it creates that open place where we can have those moments and we can be, I don't know, there's some mutual vulnerability there where I don't have all the answers. But you know what? I'm not going to rest until we find them.
I love that. And for you, Chris, what are some ways that you'd like to break the cycle in the future?
Well, I don't have children of my own, but I do have 5 nieces and a nephew. My siblings are way older, so I got to share a lot of this with them while they were growing up. For me, it was really important to not be in the closet about the practices that I do, even with my family, which wasn't easy in the beginning, because what I do is really out of the box. So it's about being really authentic at family functions. And really, of course, what it is it's the mission in the work that I do. So I speak to hundreds of other energy healing professionals from a variety of backgrounds. Talking about these principles. And I've got a book coming out next week that talks about the energy of emotion and how we can process our emotions. So it's doing whatever I can to get this into the hands of people that don't know that in really simple ways that they can be processing the emotions so they're not at the mercy of them.
I love that. So your way is to spread the information as much as you can.
Absolutely.
As you can.
Awesome. I say, tell people I'm an evangelical about this work.
And how is energy work different from traditional therapy or psychology? I want you to get into it more later, but just like a quick little breakdown of what the difference is.
Sometimes sessions can look like a therapy session where someone comes in and they're talking about their problems, they're talking about their pain, they're talking about something area where they're stuck or a symptomology of something that's happening with them. But as an empath, I'm actually feeling where that's held in the body. Sometimes in therapy, we're working with the left brain and the story about our emotions, but not where the emotions are held. There's a really great book called The Body Keeps the Score. Trauma and a lot of our emotions are held in our energy field and body. And so what I'm doing is directing them in practices to focus in on where it's held in the body so that that area of energetic congestion can break up and flow can move through there. Yeah. And as that happens, feelings and thoughts change.
Wow. And so there does the energy manifest like within different gestures. So if somebody's shaking their leg a lot, they might be anxious, or if there's tension within their neck, or what are some of the most common places that tension can be held or trauma?
Throat, chest, and stomach. Those are the three main areas. A lump in the throat, feeling of congestion, pain in the chest. We all know what it feels like when you have heartache, right? That's an actual energetic sensation. It's not the physical heart. It's the emotion of heartache that's there. That kicked in the stomach feeling is also very common. And so as we resolve those sensations within the body change, and then their people's perceptions about what they experience shifts along with it. So there's a lot of sighing that happens in the work. There can be a lot of like sort of jerking motions as that energy is being released. And on the other side is really true relief.
Gotcha. Awesome. And for you, Lynette, how do you plan to break the cycle?
Well, I also don't have children, but I am the oldest. So as I began my own mental health recovery journey, I began sharing my journey with my siblings at the time. And since I became an adult before they did, it was a lot of me sharing that, hey, I'm going to counseling. And when I began doing group work, hey, I'm going to group. or I'm going to this kind of workshop or a lecture. And at the time, I was just kind of doing it for myself. But eventually, I started going, I wonder how many other people don't know about these different resources. How many people don't know that there's these support groups? Because one of the things that I realized when I was in counseling, I lucked out, but it took me a while to get into a therapist. And I didn't realize, especially when you're not quite in a crisis, you don't get in immediately. So a lot of people are like anxious and ready to get started because it took them all this courage to finally get the nerve to go, okay, I need some help. But then you have this long gap between the time that you finally feel that and the time that you can get into a therapist. And I learned that, you know, having supplemental care like support groups is actually very helpful because now you have somewhere to go in the meantime or in between your counseling sessions. So having just like basic knowledge like that, to me, it didn't seem like a really big thing, but I realized later that a lot of people don't know that. And a lot of people don't think about that because when you're feeling like the world is caving in on you and you're going, I need support right now. You know, you're not really sure where else to go or where else to turn to. So me being in my own journey for mental health recovery, me looking for my own resources inspired me to share what I'm learning and what's my experience about it, and hoping that people, you know, as we say in the 12-step community, you take what you need and you leave the rest.
I can actually relate to that a lot. We have similar stories, actually. So I'm the youngest, but I was actually the first in my family to go to therapy or to get diagnosed with anything and to actually embrace seeking professional help. What was your family's response or reaction to that when you started to share that information with them?
So the very first time I went to counseling, my life was literally falling apart at that time, just full disclosure. So at that time, I was actually going through a divorce too. So at that time, my family were kind of in a state of shock because they had no idea that I was having marital problems because I have always been good at wearing a mask and pretending that everything is a-okay, everything is awesome. So they were kind of in a state of shock, but when I was saying, like, I'm having these issues and I was having them before, I need help. You know, I need help and I can't just pray this away.
I want you to talk about a little bit about that, because in the Black community, that's something that we often turn to is faith and church and praying things away. So can you explain a little bit about what that means?
Okay, so I think this will be really, really strong for me. And I've been reading and writing about this actually a lot. I happen to have been married to the pastor's son. Oh, wow. So in my case, there was a lot of just give it to Jesus going on when, you know, when I was going, I need a little bit more extra help. Jesus empowered people to give me some help.
Right.
So it took a long time for me to get over my bitterness about that whole circumstance at that time. But I have realized that a lot of, and I'll speak in particular about the Black community, so because I can't speak about any other communities, but there is a lot of kind of a stigma that is associated with demonizing mental health that I saw very prevalent in the church. It was kind of like, you're not praying hard enough, you're not giving this to God, you know, things of that nature. So I felt that a lot. In the beginning, not so much like blatant, but it was very subtle and kind of like, you know, well, have you tried this? Have you talked to the pastor? The pastor is a great person to talk to, but if they're not trained in mental health services or mental health care, they're not really going to be the best resource for somebody who is diagnosable. Yeah, I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, definitely. I want to switch gears to talking about the workplace and just business in general. So there's a statistic that says that 1 in 5 Americans have a mental condition of some sort, a mental health condition of some sort. So what are some things that you guys think companies can do to create a safe place for employees to feel more comfortable seeking help or opening up about their mental health conditions? Bruce, you want to take this?
Yeah, I think the first thing, okay, let's talk about how to make it worse. Can we start with that? If you have no idea what resources are available inside of your company or inside of your community, and someone comes to tell you that they're going through something challenging, well, let's just say, okay, that you're probably going to communicate something that would increase the stigma, okay? So what I would suggest, first of all, if your company has any sort of mental health resources, so either mental health is attached to your benefit package, or sometimes there's supplemental resources available for a certain number of counseling sessions or things like that. First of all, just being aware that those are out there, even if that's not something that you feel like you may need or something you may not need right now. But so first of all, just knowing that, okay? Because now you have something you can tell somebody when they confide in you. And then second of all, when somebody confides in you that they're going through something challenging, to thank them for sharing.
Right.
I hear a lot of horror stories of people that start going through challenging circumstances of life. And then as a result of the challenging circumstances, they start experiencing some sort of some form or some symptom on any scope of mental illness. Having someone that they can talk to and that maybe doesn't have all the answers, but is just willing to be a sounding board, it can often make the difference of like, oh no, I'm going through something terrible, or I'm crazy, or I have to find another job because I just can't handle this, right? Versus like, I don't know, just imagine if you went through something that was kind of scary to you. You start feeling, you know, you start feeling pain in your heart that's not due to a medical condition. You start breaking out in a rash. You start, you start having neck tension and like you can't move your neck anymore. Imagine being able to go to someone and all they respond with is, thank you so much for sharing with me. Like, thank you for telling me. That had to be really hard for you to tell somebody.
Right.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. So I'm you mean I'm not crazy? Well, you're going through something hard. That doesn't mean you're crazy.
Right. Especially if the other person can relate to it and share a similar story, that helps too.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then it's like, all right, I don't know what to do either. I do know that our company offers this benefit. Why don't we look into that together?
Gotcha. Love it. And Chris, what do you think? What are some things that companies can do to create a safe place?
Well, it can start with creating a culture of health, period. If it's expected for employees to work 10 and 12 hours a day, several days a week, to work through lunch and sit and have lunch at their desk instead of getting out and taking a walk, that is not conducive for mental health or any level of health. And you cannot separate physical well-being and the mental emotional health component. Okay. They're absolutely intertwined. Mm-hmm. If you have employees that are stressed out, overworked, having a lot of high pressure deadlines, not giving the support that they need to be able to complete a project, you know, they can give them all the employee assistance programs that they need, but it's not going to actually change anything. So I would say that they need to look at their company culture. And what is expected? I teach a lot in Europe. Oh my God, they have such a completely different ideas about work over there. Mm-hmm. And the employee is expected to have a life and take vacation time, which they get a huge amount more than we do. they are expected to have time off when they have a baby. They're expected to, you know, not take phone calls and emails on the weekends and when they're not actually working. You know, so we have become a culture here that work has become everything. Mm-hmm. Sometimes at the sacrifice of family relationships and friendships and cultural activities and things that we really enjoy. And of course, people not exercising or eating right is, it affects that as well. So, I would say that they need to set up reasonable expectations of what they need from their staff. And to create a culture where health is emphasized at every level.
Awesome. And Lynette, what do you think? How can companies create a safe space?
Mm-hmm. So I honestly have not worked in corporate in a really long time. Mm-hmm. So I can speak from the voice of small business owners and entrepreneurs.
Yep.
So one of the reasons why I started Love Yourself, Love Your Business is because I wanted to begin with the concept of grounding yourself. What I've learned, even when I did at the time work in corporate, is corporate leaders can't expect people to want to participate in programs like EAP or any workplace wellness if they're not embedding the concepts and the principles of a culture of health themselves. Mm-hmm. So honestly, I really feel like if you are a leader of a company, whether you're a company unto yourself or a larger corporation, it has to start from the top down. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that I would say. You definitely have to start from the top down. I have taken the concept of embedding a love ethic into your practice, into your work, into your life. In all aspects, because the concept of an ethic of love can start within and lead yourself out. So, you know, one of the biggest things that we say is to make sure that you fill your own cup first so that you can give to others from the overflow. You can't give from an empty cup. And right. I think you take that same thing with you no matter where you go. If you came into, like, for instance, in my case, I came into my business with my mental health issues. So I couldn't possibly expect that I was going to have this completely healthy business mm-hmm. with an unhealthy me.
Right.
So
it starts with you.
It starts with you.
Awesome. And so, Chris, you kind of touched on the culture that we have here of nonstop working and making our work our life and sacrificing everything else in the meantime. It's almost glamorized now, like the grind and the hustle culture. With that, how do we avoid burnout or mental exhaustion? Like, what are some things that people can do, whether you're in a startup, whether you're in a corporate world, or you work, you know, a regular factory job or whatever it is? How can we avoid burnout?
So I would say taking time for conscious breathing. You know, mindfulness is a really hot word that not a lot of people actually do. So I would take the time to become fully present in the moment, closing the eyes, consciously breathing in and out. Taking those little breaks throughout the day can make a really huge difference. I teach people about grounding their energy. That's something that everybody should do first thing in the morning and last thing that they do before they go to sleep. An easy way of doing that is to take a metal spoon and rub it vigorously on the bottom of your feet. There's enough magnetic energy in that metal that it's going to ground you. When you're in your head, when you're in busyness, you're not actually grounded energetically. So that makes a huge difference in your physical energy level and your immune system functioning. So grounding in the beginning of the day and at the end of the day. And I would say taking time to be present for emotional triggers. So you're in a meeting, somebody says something and you feel a reaction happening, you know, your nervous system, you know, shifts, right? And you may feel your heart palpitating. You may feel, you know, that sense of being threatened, even though you know that you're not in any kind of physical danger. Mm-hmm. As soon as you can, to going to the restroom, going into the conference room, going out for a walk, but stopping, dropping into the sensations that you're feeling in the body, breathing into those, being present to them, and allowing the energy of that, those sensations to then change. That will change your life in every single way. So, and also honoring the fact that this addiction to busyness is an addiction. We get a hit from it. I'm in the middle of a book launch. I'm getting high on it too. I'm like, I'm in full functioning mode from very early in the morning till late at night, with a practice and all the stuff that I need to do to get word out about this. And I'm getting high on it. And of course it's starting to affect my sleep. So I'm also taking those breaks myself, because we can get a sense of a great accomplishment by checking off those things on the to-do list, mm-hmm. include some self-care things on the to-do list. So it's not just about what business is, right. You know, if you took a walk at your lunch hour, that's something that you can check off, get some hits from some things that are really working on your well-being.
So mindfulness and being present, you think, is the key.
Cool. Yeah.
And Bruce, for you, how do you avoid burnout and exhaustion?
So where burnout in the job comes from. Okay. Cause I think that we all, or many of us, okay. Mm-hmm. Not all of us, many of us start out with a job wanting to do good. We're wanting to do good for the company. We're wanting to excel for them. We're wanting to excel for ourselves. We're wanting, or if we're in some sort of helping profession, we're wanting to help people. The trouble we get into is when we start having expectations over our work performance. Mm. If I am caring for another individual, so if I'm working as a professor, if I'm working as a teacher, if I'm working as, if I'm working with some sort of population that I have the potential of impacting, mm-hmm. and I'm caring for them and I'm expecting them either to be grateful or to grow or to change. If I expect that of them and it doesn't happen, that's stressful for me and mm-hmm. it leads to burnout. But if I'm able to care, and I'm able to care for those individuals, and it's in a way that I hope that they're able to receive it. That's what leads to fulfillment. That's what leads to happiness. I'm going back to what Lynette talked about as far as like bringing love into the workplace. That's what love is. It's unconditional. So if I'm caring for you, let's say I get the door for you, and I get all upset because you didn't say thank you. I didn't actually get the door for you. I got right. the door for me.
For me, yeah. Yep.
Okay. I'm hoping you're going to meet my needs by me getting the door. Well, that mm-hmm. doesn't tend to look pretty. That doesn't tend, we don't want to surround ourselves with people who are like doing kind things conditionally, right? Right. We want to surround ourselves by people who are doing kind things because they're kind people. And that's mm-hmm. the kind of person that I want to be. I want to be someone who tries to make an impact in my workplace because I care for people. Not because I need people to care for me. It's mm. sort of this, it's sort of this, I don't know, it becomes really challenging in the workplace because we want to do good. We want to make an impact, right? And that doesn't matter if we're an architect or a police officer, or it doesn't matter, or a graphic designer. It doesn't matter what our workplace is. We want to be able to provide a good service for people. Mm-hmm. And just where we get hung up is, I'm needing to provide a good service so that I can get validated. It was never my job in life to go around getting all the validation that I need. It's my job to become validation for other people.
Gotcha. And that's an interesting point too, because you say that we shouldn't go into it with expectations, but what about the expectations that are placed on you? So if you work for somebody and there's a business and a bottom line and you still have to meet certain results at the end of the week or at the end of the month or whatever it is, how do you avoid stressing out about those things? Because you still have to perform.
So that's a contractual expectation, which is different than an emotional expectation. Okay. So if my boss says to me that I need to have created four of whatever they are by the end of the week, mm-hmm. That's a natural stressor. Okay. As long as I have responsibility and the authority to make that happen. If I don't have the authority to make that happen, again, that's going to cause stress. Okay. And that's perhaps where we as employees need to have boundaries to say, like, hey, look, I get that this is what has to be accomplished. I'm looking at what I'm capable of. And because of these circumstances, I'm incapable of doing that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that becomes an open conversation, right? If you're going in and you are if you're trying to meet the expectation, right? So if it's an emotional expectation, that's very different. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's like, my boss said that I'm required to do this, but he would be very happy with me. She would be very happy with me if I did this. Right. And I have to look at, so I'm going to provide this service and I'm going to do the very best that I can. Mm-hmm. And I hope that that is going to cheer their heart. I hope that that's going to be something that's wonderful. I don't know, if I'm going into a job and it's something that I'm passionate about, I'm going to have a different level of energy. I'm going to bring a different quality of work to the table. Mm-hmm. Versus, hey, this pays the bills. Okay.
Right.
So if what the research shows is that if we are fulfilling a need that we had as a child, okay. So the research is specifically done in doctors. So if a doctor goes into the emergency room and they see a patient who's in pain and they hurt just a little bit, it actually takes the doctor feeling a little bit of pain and then they're able to go do something about that pain. There's all these outcomes that come about. The doctor is physically healthier. They're happier. They get sued less. Okay, right? Because they're nicer. So therefore, they're not going to get sued as much. Mm. And their patients get better faster. Mm. That's what happens if we, because of something we didn't get when we were kids or something that we didn't get, because our parents were giving to us what they needed, not necessarily what we needed. Mm-hmm. So when we go into the workplace with that heart of what can I fix? I think often too, like we ask a kid, what do you want to do when you grow up? Mm-hmm. That puts pressure on them right away. They don't know enough about themselves at the age of 4 or 5 or 10 or 12 to be able to say, this is who I am and this right. is what I want to do.
Yeah.
If you could instead ask a child or a college student or yourself, if you're rethinking your whole life, what problems are out there that I want to solve? Mm-hmm. See, that becomes a whole, now I'm not going in like I have to go into this job because it's my identity. Now I'm going in, which creates stress, okay? Or it creates a carrot where I have to stretch just a little bit further to accomplish this. And then, oh, there's a new carrot and I got to blah, blah, blah. That just creates stress. Mm-hmm. Versus what problem exists in the world that I could solve through my occupation? Mm-hmm. Now we have a whole different way, right? We can go into a workplace that is incredibly stressful and thrive in that place because we didn't go into that workplace to meet our needs. We went into that workplace because there's a problem and we see how we can do something to impact that.
Awesome. Awesome. And Lynette, did you want to add to that? How do you avoid burnout and exhaustion?
Sure. I'll be really quick because honestly, I loved what both Chris and Bruce said, and I probably would answer very, very similar.
Definitely.
What I was going to say, just to kind of cap on top of what has already been said, is going back to wanting to ground and not seek this emotional, I call it workplace codependency. You know, where you're going into your workplace and you're trying to have this workplace and the people in it fulfill the things that you need to learn how to bring to yourself.
Right.
And I think that when you go into a workplace with that notion, you're going to burn out much faster because you're more trying to people please rather than do the work that is going to contribute to you fulfilling your purpose and your calling.
Mm.
So I'll leave it at that. That I think that's a huge thing.
Yeah.
When it comes to not getting so burnt out. When you, as Simon says, remember your why.
Mm. Those were great answers. Thank you all for sharing those. So Lynette, I want to ask you, with the loneliness of entrepreneurship, which a lot of people don't know about before they actually get into building a business, what are some ways that, you know, business owners can stay mentally healthy while running their business? Like, I know you've touched on some, but what are some of the things that you do and some of the advice that you can give to entrepreneurs?
Mm-hmm. So there are certain things that I would suggest. One is developing some kind of practice. Me personally, I have a morning practice. If I don't have anything else, I can at least start my day off feeling like, okay, mm-hmm. I have said my affirmations. I've done my prayer time. I've done my morning pages or my journal time so I can get out of my head, which is something that we as entrepreneurs, we need to do. Right. So like, just get it out your head. I've done my morning yoga stretches. You know, I try to make sure that I have that strong foundation to start my day as an entrepreneur. Even when sometimes the day just is like, oh man, I completely forgot I had this appointment and I don't know why I scheduled it at this time. But now I don't have as much time to do my journal. I know that I have written down and documented this process so I can always return to it. So I have this foundation. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that I do. Obviously, I would suggest having a support group. Right. As entrepreneurs, it is lonely at the top. It's especially for somebody like me. I pretty much live on my computer. Mm-hmm. And until I started hosting my events and everything like that, I pretty much was a robot. You know, like when I first started going out to network again, I was extremely awkward and it made me not want to go out because I wasn't used to it anymore. So I realized that what we need, especially for people like me who's an introvert, you know, being able to go to these intentional type of spaces where we can feel like we have a sense of belonging and where people can go, I get you. I see you. I feel you. You know, when you're that's going, important. Oh my gosh, I got to make payroll or I have to pay everybody, all my contractors, and I don't have any money for myself besides having a ramen dinner tonight. You know, like.
Right. You need somebody that can understand what you're going through.
Yes, you need people to understand it. And a lot of entrepreneurs, we go through that emotional roller coaster.
Up and down.
Like, I got it. Aha! Nope, I suck. So, you know, having that support. So that foundational practice, that support. And of course, counseling and therapy. You know, I always highly recommend that entrepreneurs and business owners not be ashamed to seek help, you know, professional help, mental health, mental health help and support from a professional, whether that be an energy worker like Chris or a psychologist or a therapist like Bruce, you know, seeking out somebody and not giving up, because everybody, just like with business, everybody's not a good fit for you. Every psychologist or therapist is not a good fit, but you continue to look until you find your right person. You have to be just as ambitious about your mental health care as you are about going to see a physical doctor, your eye doctor,
right,
your dentist. you have to be persistent, consistent, and vigilant.
Yeah. And one thing I always say is that it's your responsibility to heal. No matter what happened to you in your past or your traumas that from your childhood, it's your responsibility to be able to heal. So Yeah. I definitely love that answer. And for you, Chris, I know that one of your beliefs is that faith, purpose, and balanced energy are the solutions to our current world climate. What are some of the biggest things you think add to the overall, I guess I would say, declining mental wellness of our population or our country here? Is it social media? Is it our diets? What are the things you think are the biggest catalyst to that?
Breaking down of traditional communities, number one, for sure. You know, I live in Montclair, New Jersey. It's these huge, giant homes where multi-generational people used to live in them, which are now broken up into apartments. Mm-hmm. There are more people living alone than ever before in human history. We are feeling levels of isolation that are unlike anything we've ever had before. Mm-hmm. Look, we can all go on Amazon and just get our groceries and everything delivered, not even leave the place, right? And the convenience of that is extremely seductive. I'm also a natural introvert, yet very extroverted in the work that I do. And so I think that community aspect is really, really foundational. You have to find your tribe. You have to find people that have similar values that you do, have similar beliefs, that can say to you, you're not crazy. The world really is turned upside down. So I think that that's a big component of it. I do think that health-wise, I think with electromagnetic frequencies and Wi-Fi, that is having an effect on our well-being. I can feel it from an energetic standpoint. I'm 12 mm-hmm. miles from New York City. I'm bombarded by it too. But it's absolutely having an effect on our physical and emotional well-being. And our bodies weren't designed for it. You know, there's things that you can do to mitigate some of the damages that come with that. But that's a really big component of it. And I think that we're just living in times of great uncertainty. We're seeing it all around us, that there's a breaking up of the myths and illusions that we've had about famous people, about politics, about government, about the financial and banking industry, about Hollywood. Yeah. Everywhere we look, things and fantasies that we have invested in are no longer what we thought they were. And we have gotten some sense of security in many of those things that really weren't secure at all. Right. So this is a time when truth and authenticity is emerging out of illusion and fantasy. And so we have an opportunity to be in our own authenticity, to honor our own truths, to speak the truth about how we feel and who we really, really are. And that can make a huge difference. And also calling out the fantasy and the BS when we see it, for sure, mm-hmm. is a way of dispelling the myths that we've bought into. So yeah. It's really important that we have practices that are really going to be effective when everything outside of us isn't what we thought it was.
Right. I think it's interesting that the purpose of social media is to connect people more. So it should be easier to find your tribe or your community that you fit with. But it's actually making us more disconnected, as you said.
Because there's a superficiality to it. You mm-hmm. can bring it into a greater depth. I have colleagues all over the world that I confer with. That's how I deal with my loneliness. I have a monthly in-person group of local EFT practitioners where we get together in my office and we talk shop and work together. I also have a co-mentoring group that's with people from around the world that I do once a month. And many of those people I've connected with online, but I had to spend the time and the investment to deepen those connections beyond "way to go" or "that's awesome."
Or an emoji or a like or whatever it is. Yeah, right. Definitely. And then for you, Bruce, you're a consultant for some organizations and, you know, you teach pro mental health practices. So what are some of those practices and how have they helped the organization, the team, the culture, and even the employers themselves?
I think it starts with recognizing what your own strengths are. And your strengths are not necessarily your skills. Your strengths are why or how did what happened to me when I was little hurt? Because if you can identify that, it puts you in the same place as that doctor that is able to take that hurt and do something about it. If you can identify what it is about yourself. So there's three categories of injury that affects our identity. So either we felt overly vulnerable when we were kids, or we felt like there wasn't any peace, or we felt like rejected, like we couldn't be authentic, like what Chris was talking about. Or we felt insignificant, or like we didn't have a voice. Those are three categories of like care in the world. And so if we experience those things as kids, there's a reason for it. And we're able to take that energy, right? Because what we don't want to do is we don't want to say like, stop that anxiety, stop those feelings, stop that depression. We want to take that energy and do something about it, because there's a reason we're experiencing that in our bodies. So if you're able to identify, okay, I felt rejected as a kid, well, now what can I do with it? Now I can go and I can give acceptance to other people, and that acceptance brings authenticity. Or I felt vulnerable as a kid. So now I'm going to go and I'm going to speak the truth to people, and I might be doing it boldly, but I'm going to do it from a place in my heart. I'm going to do it from a place of care. Or I felt like I had no voice. I felt like I had no significance. So then I'm going to be the person that gives voice and significance to other people. That's our grounding, because now we're talking about identity, right? Those are the things about myself that I most value. When we are operating out of those elements, so wherever you find yourself, whichever those categories you find yourself in. So for me, it's the acceptance and authenticity piece. So when I'm bringing acceptance and when I'm bringing authenticity as a form of caring for another individual, it engages 100% of my brain. There's no region of the brain that is dormant while I'm figuring out how to best care for this person, which makes it a superpower. The other thing that happens is it releases one of the chemicals in the brain that over the last 20 years we've really begun to understand, and it's oxytocin. And what oxytocin does is it connects us to other people. So when we feel the most connected is when we are the most, that's when oxytocin is flowing. What we've learned about oxytocin is that when we are connecting with other people, it reduces 100% of the stress hormones. So if you think about it, let's say there is a pit of vipers, okay? Vipers and spiders and everything else. And on the other side of that pit is someone that we care deeply about that needs saved. It doesn't matter how afraid we are of that pit or what's in that pit or that we might get bit. There's something on the other side that needs our saving. Okay, so what happens is the oxytocin kicks in and I care more about that person than I do about these terrible things that are happening. And so the stress hormones go away, the oxytocin kicks in, and we're able to do some things with superpower ability. And so if you're able to do that in your line of occupation, it gives you this, I mean, just all the time. I'm not that smart of a person, and yet I profess college, okay? I tell my students all the time, like, guys, this is all oxytocin right now, because I need my entire brain to like be able to communicate this to you, right?
Right.
I spell stuff on the board and I'm like, I don't know how to spell this. Can y'all help me out? Right. but because I have access to my whole brain, I'm able to do things that in another occupation or if I were to go try and teach math, I would be floundering, because it's just that level of skill set just isn't something that I have readily available.
Right.
But when I'm talking about caring for people and I'm looking at those students who sat in the same exact chairs that I sat in when I was in college, and I'm like, you can do this. It just creates a place where, first of all, my stress is reduced, right? It's like, I can be okay being authentic. I can be okay being exactly the person that I'm supposed to be, with all my strengths and all my deficits. And then I'm able to care for people and actually make impact. I don't expect the impact to happen. I hope that it does. And when it does, it just cheers my heart.
Yeah. So we all have a superpower and we just need to figure out what that is. And that takes time and reflection and self-development, of course. So before we close out, I want to get like a piece of advice from each of you. But someone left a comment on our Facebook and I just wanted to read it out to you guys and kind of get like a quick little take on it. Melissa says, oh my goodness, this hits hard. Obviously this conversation, she means, my last job was horribly stressful. I was expected to work nearly every day in social work. I had to do 60 to 70 hours a week and there was no support, just get the job done. Then they fired me when I got sick. They labeled me as flaky and unreliable because their environment was hostile and destructive. So what's you guys' take on that comment? I mean, we kind of touched on that, the culture. Lynette, it looks like you have something you want to add. What's your take on it?
Melissa, my circumstances were very similar. I worked in the Dyfus building in Camden in a substance abuse unit. And I too got fired the day after I came back from sick leave. Wow. And that's why I was sitting there going, oh my gosh, it's my story. And it's not surprising that many of us will continue to probably have that similar story. Mm-hmm. At that time, I thought the worst of everything, because that was, like I said, at that time, I lost the job. I was going through the worst. All of that all happened at that same time. So this is what I've learned from that. Sometimes it takes a breakdown to get to the breakthrough. I now look back over my life, because that was over 10 years ago. I'm dating myself a little bit. I realized that I could reinvent myself. I could rise like the phoenix. And the thing is, we think such a wonderful thing about the phoenix, right? Oh man, it's this legendary bird that rises out of the ashes. But a lot of people forget about the whole burn part. Mm-hmm. So, you know, understand and have faith in yourself that everything that you're going through, everything that you have been, you know, how people have treated you, these are all going to be lessons to fuel your superpower. And yeah, it's so interesting that Bruce brought that up, because I totally have this whole superpower theme and everything, because I'm totally a comic geek. But
okay.
But all of these things are going to be what helps make you you, Melissa. There's hope for the flowers. That's what I like to say. Just trust and believe. Trust the process. It works.
Yeah. And Chris, before you add to that, there's a response to Melissa's comment that I think you can add to. She says, I get it. I worked in a horribly stressful job for 17 years. I gave it my all and even got great reviews. 17 years of this stress took its toll on my body and I got really ill. I had a 10% chance of survival. I was hospitalized for 3 months and 1 year of rehabilitation. My employer fired me and I was black labeled in my line of work. So Chris, with the energy work that you do, you know how your emotional can manifest itself within your body. Absolutely. So talk about, give us your take on that response. That was from Rosie. Thanks for commenting, Rosie.
I really appreciate Melissa and Rosie making these comments, because they are not alone.
Yeah.
This is epidemic. I am working with people in their 30s that are struggling with autoimmune conditions, because since they got out of college, they've just been overworking, overexhausted, overwired, overtired, going. And the body at some point is going to say, we know for sure that stress is a huge factor in many, many epidemic conditions right now. Type 2 diabetes, all the autoimmune conditions, which I have to tell you, regular traditional medicine is really at a loss to help a lot of those things. We are seeing things that we've never seen before. And so I'm going to say to both of them that what they experienced was trauma. This was trauma that happened over a long period of time. And I want them to know that there are practices out there that can really transform this for them, to look into things like EFT, emotional freedom techniques, to look into energy medicine, to look into emotion and body code, to look into what is considered energy psychology. This is the fourth wave of psychology. There is tons of scientific proof that these practices work, that they work in places where other things have not, that they are working and helping veterans with PTSD and all the way to people that survived the Holocaust in Rwanda. Okay. These practices are helping and they are not mainstream yet. So I'm going to encourage them to do some research, to look into it, to find practitioners out there that are well-trained in working with trauma, that this could be their awakening. This could be what Lynette shared. This could be their Phoenix Rising experience. Me, in the environments I worked in, I was chewed up and spit out. And now what I am doing, I've never been happier or healthier in my entire life. And I'm 49 and I'm proud to say that. So I want to say to them that there's lots of hope out there, and it doesn't take weekly sessions for years and years and years, because we're going to the places where the trauma exists. We are allowing that safely to dissipate and for people to transform. And it can happen faster than they ever thought possible. Take it seriously and get the help they need.
Awesome. I love that. And Bruce, did you want to add something for Melissa and Rosie?
Yeah. So first of all, Melissa, I want to just say that I have a feeling that if it was an agency. So we're just going to call it an agency.
Mm-hmm. Social work.
Social work. Okay, so I have a feeling that the social work agency that you are working for, mm-hmm, probably wasn't just doing that to you.
Yeah.
And so I think that you just happened to be the one that at that moment, and I wouldn't believe that that's happening only to you only once. I have a feeling that your experience would be common for people working there. So I just want to say, I'm sorry that that happened to you. That sounds really, really tough. And it doesn't sound like that's your fault. When you're working for 60 or 70 hours a week, and at the end of it, you're responding like a human being. So you're responding with, exhaustion. And like you mentioned a little bit later in the comments, with some autoimmune symptoms, that's not your fault. Right. What I'm hearing you say is that you did all of that work and you didn't get the support that you needed. Mm-hmm. And what that tells me is that you have a heart to support other people. You have a heart to be someone who supports people. And so if I could encourage you to learn from that horrible, horrible experience, it would be, so what you know about yourself is that you're going to be someone that goes into a job as a supportive person. That teaches you something about yourself, so that when things start to get stressful, so first of all, you're not going to be looking for that type of agency ever again. You've learned that about yourself, right?
Right.
So that when you find yourself in a new employment situation, you're going into that situation from, it's like, okay, so what did I learn from that? I learned that it's really hard for people to go through things without support. So how do I give people the support that I needed and hope that it's what they need and hope that it's right. It's without that expectation. So I'm not going in being like, here's all my support, y'all better respond. It's here's some support. And I hope that this is helpful. Mm-hmm. That's how you take a really, really horrible, horrible experience that you poured your life and you poured your heart into, and you take it to a place of, okay, so now I had that horrible experience, but that made me a more supportive person. Because I know what it's like to work 60 and 70 hours a week and to be treated like crap. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to allow that to happen to any of my coworkers. I'm not gonna allow that to happen to my boss. I'm not gonna allow that to happen to the people that I serve. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be the person that shows up and says, no matter what, I'm gonna stand next to you while you go through this really hard thing. Because I know the pain, I know the physical symptoms, I know the horror of what comes along, of what comes from going through something really difficult and having no one that stands next to me. So you, sir, you, ma'am, you, child, you, whatever, are not going through this by yourself.
Yeah, definitely. So Melissa and Rosie, I hope that those responses were able to help you, and good luck in your future careers and endeavors. As we wrap up here, I just want everyone to give one takeaway that we can get from this conversation. So how can we move forward and start creating some action as far as mental health initiatives in the workplace and destigmatizing mental health? Lynette, let's start with you. One takeaway.
starts with awareness. Mental health first aid is free. Take the class. That's my takeaway.
Okay. Is that available everywhere? Like, is that just online and anybody can?
I think you can do it online. Most of the time it's in person, but I do know it's free training. Your work can actually host it, or you can look for a free training to go to and attend yourself.
Oh, nice. Awesome. Mental Health First Aid USA?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And Chris, what about for you? What's one takeaway?
It's human nature to avoid pain. And so I'm going to tell everybody to do something that's really counterintuitive. Instead of going for happy hour, instead of avoiding your emotional feelings, I want you to turn to them. I want you to welcome them forward. I want you to breathe through them. If all of us just took a moment to be present to our upset emotions, the amazing thing that happens is our greater capacity for joy and happiness expands, because all emotions are on a spectrum. So you can't repress the things you don't like and experience more of the ones that you do. Mm-hmm. So make a practice. There's lots of different things out there you can do to just be present to your emotions, to breathe through them, to move through them, and it will change everything in your life.
Awesome. And Bruce, what's one takeaway for you?
I would say care for others without expectations, mm-hmm. and hope that they're able to receive what you have to offer. So speak the truth, accept and stand and walk beside people, give them voice, and do that without expecting anything. That's what love is.
Awesome. So I want to thank my guests, Lynette, Chris, and Bruce, for joining me on today's webinar. I also want to give a special guest to everybody who's watching and listening. And again, for my guests taking the time to share their stories and what they do for a living. Let everyone know where they can reach you or find out more about your businesses. So like a little 30-second promo. Lynette, let's start with you.
Sure. So my nonprofit is Love Yourself, Love Your Business. We are actually in the process of trying to get that 501c3. So nice. You can reach us at love self, love biz with a Z at the end, .com. And all of our social media platforms and our email lists and our events, everything is on that website. So, you know, if mental health and support for entrepreneurs and small business owners is your thing, we are totally welcoming you.
Love it. Love it. Thank you, Lynette. Chris?
You can find me at www.befreetoflourish.com. Check out my book. This has gone Amazon for $10.39 for a couple of cups of coffee. This talks about the energy of emotion. It talks about the cutting edge things that are available, and it takes all the woo-woo out of it. This is left brain, simple, pragmatic, step-by-step processes that you can do. It's an innocent looking book, but I can tell you that it will change your life. And so pick it up. It will be worth it.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Chris. And Bruce?
So seriously, just send me a PM.
Okay. LinkedIn, Facebook.
Facebook is great. Okay. So, so it looks like a couple of things. I work with individuals on actually finding what the opposite of that pain is for them. And so like, sort of like, what's your superpower? Mm-hmm. But then also, because my superpower contradicts other people's superpowers and it can cause conflict. And that is what like organizational conflict can look like. So when I work with companies, we're doing it in a larger scale, but also like looking to, so if we're making a really difficult decision or we have a difficult announcement to make, how do we do this with the least amount of impact on our company, so that when we're on the other side of this, we have something sustainable. So that's the type of work that I do with businesses, corporations. Gotcha. So that's how to reach me.
Awesome. Awesome. This webinar was brought to you by Penji. We provide on-demand graphic design for businesses, startups, marketing teams, agencies, and more. So you can check us out at penji.co for more information. Also, the webinar will be available on Penji's website pretty soon, and also on our Facebook page as well to watch later. So another thank you to my guests for joining us, and to everyone else who's watching and listening. Have a safe and productive day.